From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, investigative reporter Cheryl Jones joins us. UFO disclosure, followed by your calls, conversations with Cheryl. Here's what's happening. A whopping record 3.3 million people filed claims for unemployment in the United States last week as the COVID-19 pandemic shut down large parts of America's economy and the full scale of the impact of the crisis began to emerge. The experts warned of a catastrophic unemployment crisis after the Labor Department announced jobless claims filed by individuals seeking unemployment benefits rose by more than 3 million to 3.28 million from the 281,000 the previous week. The figure is the highest ever reported, beating the previous record of 695,000 claims filed the week ending October 2nd, 1982. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average, however, wrapped up its strongest 3 days in 9 decades as record weekly U.S. jobless claims came in below the investors' worst fears. And the focus stayed on an unprecedented $2 trillion stimulus awaiting approval by the U.S. House of Representatives. The United States on Thursday overtook China and Italy in confirmed coronavirus cases with more than 82,000 in all. They call it a grim milestone reported by Johns Hopkins University. What they don't say, though, is that there are 3 million people with the seasonal flu already. The lead author of a dire coronavirus study cited by the White House, Downing Street, and Britain and other governments in their decisions to urge or impose unprecedented lockdowns and social distancing has drastically revised the estimated death toll of the pandemic in the United Kingdom. Listen to this story. The study by the Imperial College of London, published on March 16th, estimated that 2.2 million Americans and 500,000 Brits would die from this. Now the lead author, his name is Neil Ferguson, has testified to a parliamentary committee that the United Kingdom's death toll is unlikely to exceed 20,000. They predicted 500,000, but it's unlikely to exceed 20,000 and could be, they say, much lower. And more than half of that number would have died anyway, he says, by the end of the year because of their age, underlying illnesses. Interesting statistic there. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo has said that his stay-at-home order for the entirety of New York State was probably not the best public health strategy. In a press conference in Albany, New York, Cuomo said the smartest way forward would be a public health strategy that complemented a get-back-to-work strategy, and he is right. Let's check in with Dr. John Curtis. John, lots going on today in this world, huh?
Oh, well, you know, this is what I think a lot of people don't get about this crisis. The percentage of cases in the world the U.S. has is about 16% right now, coronavirus cases. New York has a death, the death rate globally is about 4%. The death rate in New York right now with this coronavirus is about 1.2%. In California, it's about 2%. Now, the governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, said a couple days ago that what he's experiencing, you know, in New York is going to be transferred to California very soon. And the governor of California, just a week ago, we talked about him, estimated that 60% of the California population was going to be infected with this. That would mean that about 25.5 million people in California would get this. Right now, California is about 4,000 cases.
It's not going to happen, John.
It's not going to happen. It's grossly exaggerated. It's pure scare tactics that's going on right now, George. And we have the biggest financial crisis since the Great Depression happening right now.
And let me ask you this, though, John, because this is something that's been on my mind. I don't get it. I don't understand it. But why does it seem that every country that is having some kind of a virus situation is shutting down or locking down? Why are they all doing this? I don't understand it.
Because it's the herd mentality. It's the prevailing view the community spread is best countered by forcing people to stay in their homes. Now,
and that's not working.
Well, not only is it not working, it's completely counterproductive.
Well, here's another thing they say.
The economy in the process.
Another thing they've said is this is passed along if somebody sneezes on you or some kind of liquid from their mouth gets on you.
Right.
That's not happening. All these people that have come down with this virus, they haven't been splattered on by anybody else. I don't get that. So how's that happening?
Well, I mean, they're claiming that, you know, the aerosol effect is airborne for more than just a few minutes. It can stay up there for 15 minutes. They're also saying that it can go on any surface and stay there for hours. So if somebody touches a surface. But I think the bottom line with all this is not 1918. We're not entering H1N1, 500 million people around the globe and 50 million dead. We're looking at something that's far less than the seasonal flu is, as we know, in terms of numbers and in terms of deaths. And the Stanford University Nobel Prize winner, Michael Levitt, has said that he sees this as leveling out very soon, and that there's a very substantial part of the U.S. population, the global population, that is immune to the coronavirus, that there are a substantial part of the population would not get this if somebody sneezed in your face.
That's probably true. John, thank you so much. John's website, onlinecolumnist.com. He has a regular column. Check him out. A woman purposely coughed on $35,000 worth of food in Pennsylvania in a grocery store. They had to toss out the food. Police say that she likely faces criminal charges for coughing, one of the primary ways the coronavirus spreads, they say. The officials don't believe she's infected at all, however. But that wasn't a very nice thing for her to do. Royal Caribbean, the cruise liners, has decided to keep its cruise ships docked for another month. The company voluntarily stopped any new sailings on March 13th with the original intention of resuming in late March. That's not going to happen. Let's check in with our mariner, Captain Kelly Sweeney. Kelly, you think that's a good idea to keep these ships docked or what?
Ahoy, George. As far as the ships being docked, yes, I think it's a very good idea. We're talking about a crisis here that is ripping the shipping industry apart. It is so bad now in the maritime world that there are ports that are closing down to all ships in different parts of the world, all ships, not just cruise ships. They're not allowing any ships to go in.
Why? What are they afraid of?
They're afraid of the importation of the virus through port areas, and ships, as we've talked about, are a major vector through that. Even here in the U.S., George, we rely on, our economy relies on shipping. And cargo at U.S. ports, since this crisis has begun, are down 25%. Cargo is down 25%. Store shelves, and I would like to hear what some of the listeners have to say about this, but in our area, store shelves are emptying, and I don't see any way that these items are going to be replaced anytime soon, and I believe personally it could get much worse before it gets better. So as far as Royal Caribbean and all these other cruise companies holding off, hey, it's just part of what we're going to see as the shipping industry just gets ravaged by this crisis.
Kelly's website, maritimeheadhunters.com, by the way. Thank you, Kelly. And I got to tell you, during open lines tomorrow night, I'd love to hear from you truck drivers to tell me what's it like with the supply chain. Are you hauling more or less goods? Let's find out from you during open lines tomorrow night. And we will also be having our intention experiment to rid this virus, just to get rid of it and to get America back into the workforce again, a major, major prayer session tomorrow night. It is international. I want you to participate in that. Dozens of dead bats have fallen out of the sky in a region in Israel, and what some have bizarrely claimed as biblical prophecy coming true. Many of the bats are young and showed no signs of trauma, leaving experts perplexed. Also tomorrow night for a couple hours, we are going live to Israel to talk with mentalist Uri Geller about what he thinks about this situation. He's got some very interesting views, and then, of course, we'll go into open lines. Up next, the prophecy of Nostradamus. What did it have to do with the coronavirus? John Hogue joins us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. John Hogue, one of our favorite guests back with us, writing on the subjects of the occult, parapsychology, mysticism. He is considered, no question about it, a world authority on Nostradamus, a best-selling author. His work has brought him international acclaim. His website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. I understand we'll talk about it a little bit later on tonight because John's with us for a couple hours, that he's beginning to do readings again. John, what a time we are living in, my friend. Whoa.
Did I not tell you that the roaring 2020s would roar?
I didn't expect them to roar this quickly, this fast.
Neither did I.
Gosh.
But it's almost like in New Year's, I mean, we've already had two brushes with war with Iran, the coronavirus, the oil recession that is really what's going on beyond all the panic about the coronavirus that happened on the 9th of March. Significant things changing the future for us.
Well, I got to tell you, John, I thought when we talked back in December that the roaring 20s would be the election. I think that's just a small part of it now.
And it almost has disappeared from the scene, which is another thing of the roaring 2020s. It roars certain things right out of the picture. Like, who's even thinking about the election pretty much right now? Remember all these years I used to tell you that we'd enter each new year of the 21st century, and more, especially by the 2020s, we'd go to sleep one night and wake up and the whole world changed the next morning.
Yeah. John, before we get into Nostradamus and some of his prophecies, I want to get your perspective because I respect you and you think things through. The media, I think they're creating hysteria. The seasonal flu, even though this coronavirus is the flu on steroids, the seasonal flu kills upwards of 60,000 people a year. I don't think this is even going to get close to it. But the media never reported that. Those statistics about the seasonal flu, I had to get from the CDC because the mainstream media never did daily reports. Hey, folks, 500 people died from the flu today. They don't do that. But on this one, it's every day, and people are going crazy over this. Why?
Well, in my early Hogue Prophecy articles, when it looked like in early January that this was coming up, and then in February I reported saying this is a plague of fear. It's not a real plague. And I actually quoted all those numbers about the average flu deaths around the world, which is sometimes between 600,000 to 800,000 people. That this, though highly contagious, it, like some other flus that I personally experienced as I grew up in my 65th orbit around the sun so far, that I felt the panic in this was far, far worse than the reality. I even said then that I thought that maybe the death toll in America would be in the low thousands at maximum, but I thought I was overstating it. But then when it came here, this is the first significant national emergency I've lived through where the partisanism that has overtaken, talk about a plague, the plague upon the media that has gotten into tribal partisan, red on blue hysteria. This is the real plague. And, we'll talk about what's happening also shadowing this is a more important story is the economy.
Yes.
But even just recently when I was voicing this in my COVID-19 report to my own readers, it was amazing to see where I said, look, when I sensed that the president was talking about not killing the baby with the bathwater, or what I called in the theme of the article, to save American lives, do not sacrifice the American life. If you undermine the economy, at a certain point, people are going to have to move. The Chinese did it. They started in February, even when Wuhan was at its worst. And I have a very strong feeling that the president's going to come out of this much stronger than he went into it. and that
I think you're
he
right.
made the first very bold executive decision, very risky, I think he's thought about it hard, and he understands, and I think his intuition is right about this. And I would imagine that he might not get the 19th of April, but by May, I think we'll start seeing some of the economy starting back into gear, just like what happened in China. Outside of Hubei province, Wuhan, there'll be a slow retooling, and that will encourage things. And then we'll have to look at what really the damage is.
Absolutely. And I still contend this was made in some viral lab in China. That's my guess. That's my gut. What do you think?
Well, we'll talk a little later about Nostradamus' prophecies that are elusive, but certainly some of his plagues are plagues that sound like bioweapons.
They sure do.
And so I have not made a conclusion. I'm still investigating it. But, the fact that there is a major weapons biological research lab in Wuhan, and although I think, even though the Chinese were withholding information, I think a lot of people in the media have, especially the pro-Trump part of the media, are kind of moving too fast and mm-hmm. thinking that this cover-up was to hide anything more than perhaps saving face.
Well, as you know, John, I don't believe in coincidences. And as soon as I found out that in Wuhan they had this weapons lab there that they have genetically worked on and tested things, to me it's one of those, there's no way this could just accidentally happen this way.
Well, actually, the thing that's intriguing about this, because, a lot of really virulent diseases are, for instance, Salisbury has Novichok. A lot of countries have Novichok in their labs. We do. So to say the Russians did it with the poisonings of the two people, the Skripals, is really not covered. And the fact that it happened so near Salisbury, where the main labs in England are, is kind of spurious. The other thing I would cite is there was a person who sent, by mistake, high, very serious infective biological elements in an unprotected package.
Jeez.
From one major lab to the other in the United States. So stupidity is also the conspirator in this.
And the TSA and Homeland Security arrested someone from China in the United States trying to carry vials of something through customs.
Yeah, I could tell you many stories of this. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing we haven't had one of these vials drop and start something. And
oh my God,
we have.
My God, I want to talk after the break about Nostradamus. We'll have you give us a little overview of just who he was. He was born in 1503, died in 1566, and you've interpreted his quatrains, his writings, and they're pretty prophetic, and they have been for a long time. And so we'll find out about more of this. John, since you've looked at this, when this started, what was your initial thought?
Well, at first, my initial thought was it was bigger than everybody's making it. And
so you felt that from the get-go.
I did. I thought that, and I wrote about it as early as in February. I started.
Well, you do document your stuff. That's
I always document everything to just to prove to myself what I get right or wrong. And it's all documented. And it was something I finished at the end of January that got published in early February, and where I just felt my first report was I really don't think this is as big as everybody's saying it. I am much more concerned, and we'll talk a little more further about this, about the inferences to blood plague in Nostradamus to relate to H1N1. Birds are mentioned, things that, and I've been writing and concerned about that since 2014, when I started writing about one bird flu, FLU, over the human's nest. It was one of my articles at Hoag Prophecy. Where we looked at that during the H1N1. I'm worried about a mutation of that, which was the same strain that created family of viruses that created the great influenza of 1918.
Well, we definitely don't want a mutation, that's for sure. We're going to come back and talk more with John Hoag. We will take calls with John next hour here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back with John Hoag. John, give us a little overview of the life of Nostradamus and how he was able to have these incredible prophetic things that he talked about in his quatrains.
Well, Nostradamus was born in 1503. His family lived in Provence. There was just a year or so before he was born, his family had to choose to convert to Christianity because they were Jews, Sephardic Jews from Spain. Probably came to the French region in the previous Inquisition wave of fear that happened at the end of the 1300s, rather than the famous Spanish Inquisition that happened at the end of the 1400s. And so they were either grain dealers or physicians, his family. He had a tremendous aptitude for astrology. It was probably the reason why he became a healer, because it was considered okay to use astrology to look at the humors of the body to plot how to heal people. So he then became this wandering apothecary and perhaps a official physician later on, although it was kind of not so... It was a wild, wild world of the Renaissance, where everything wasn't as organized and as it is now. People were pretty much on their own. And he traveled all over France, healing people. He was a protobotanist. He actually was starting to study and categorize plants, and was fast friends with Scaliger and Ajon, who was a early botanist pioneer. They had a falling out. The plague hit. His young children and his wife died. Everybody thought it was some kind of curse of the devil. He was summoned to the church justices at Toulouse, neighboring Toulouse, and he disappeared on his mule with his doctor equipment for 6 years.
Jeez.
And it was one of the classic situations of having a great shock. It often happens in the lives of great seers, that their world is turned upside down, and it triggers a deeper understanding of things that sometimes expresses itself in ability to do unusual psychic things. And in his case, there's apocryphal stories of him showing up in Italy. A bunch of monks were walking down a muddy road, and he suddenly bent in his rich clothes down into the mud before the swineherd, who was just turned into a monk. The other monks looked at him and said, "What are you doing? This man is just a swine herder." And I said, "I must bend a knee to his holiness." And that's only addressed to the Pope. That man, 40-some years later, became Sixtus V.
Wow!
You know, so he went all through the Renaissance. He got a lot of his magical gear, and he also lived in Marseille, which, unfortunately, sorry, everybody who loves Marseille, he said he hated the city. But it was a place where he was a port where he could get all the books from the Mediterranean. A lot of people thought that he went all over the Mediterranean. It's a wonderful Hollywood story, but the truth is he could have gotten everything he needed as a scholar from the bookstands of Marseille. He was practicing with Louis Serre, a very good apothecary physician, and then there was this huge flood in 1545 that went through Provence and was a historic flood, and when it dried out in spring, the most virulent attack of bubonic plague in the 16th century hit Provence. This is the same plague, the Black Death, that happened in the 1300s that killed half of Europe. And they called it le charbon, the carbons, because the lymphatic eruptions of these boils that are famous for bubonic plague go black. And so the Provençal people call it le charbon, the carbons. And he was summoned out of Marseille to Aix-en-Provence, which was the capital of Provence, to administer the sick there. And he got there. He assembled as many of the people he could who are still alive, apothecaries, medicine people, and they went to the main Hotel de Ville and set up their headquarters. And then he did many of the things that people are doing now, during this coronavirus. It was his main successful thing was to be very, very vigilant in sequestering people, not people having them gather in crowds. That, you know, he, as even though he made a very famous prediction that kind of indicates he had, at least in under trance, a vision of germs causing disease, his actual practices were more classical Roman and Greek Hippocrates
right.
things. And he, so 270 days, he fought the plague almost single-handed, sequestering people, but unlike what they would do where they had everybody taped away and the windows battened down so they, their foul humors of the plague couldn't catch people, he would open the windows up, because the one thing he did that was quite positive was he was into hygiene. He was into cleanliness. Now, people used to think, common sense, okay, the people who bathed once a year and thought they were clean freaks in 1600s, or the 1500s, one thinks then that he must have saw hygiene in the future. But when I studied him and wrote my biography, Nostradamus, A Life and Myth, I saw that he was actually following Roman Galen, the father of Roman medicine, and Greek medicine, modern medicine, which were really into clean water, clean food, cleanliness. They don't know why it worked, but there's a lot of things that the people of the past understood that they might not have known it was a germ, but they knew that when rats were around, you got to kill all the rats. They knew that all the way back into the Bible. You see passages in the Bible about that. Kill the rats when there's plague. That the things that stink and foul and are foul are not things to mix with, to be clean, to stay away from each other for a while, let the winter come. And because these often happen in the summer, the bubonic plague was much worse. And so he ended up helping the people of Aix, and then he went off to Lyon to fight another kind of plague called the whooping cough. And this is the thing that's important for what we're going to talk about in these prophecies, is Nostradamus, a lot of things, that you got to think like a 16th century person, mm-hmm. not try to impose your 21st century bias on his prophecies, as most people who write about him do. And he, many things, even the common cold was a kind of plague, pestilence. So this is important because there's a number of things he talks about in his prophecies that he calls a plague that we might call radiation sickness.
Right, okay.
Things like that. So anyway, he ended up a semi-retired doctor when he was in his 40s. He married probably somebody who was a widow, a young widow of somebody he couldn't save in Salon-Provence. He moved to Salon-Provence, built a third floor on his house, and that's where he created his secret study. He did one more long trip to Florence, you know, the capital of knowledge of the Renaissance, and got whatever he needed there, equipment and stuff, to start his history of the future gazing.
Let me ask you about social media, too, John, because there's something running around social media that attributes this coronavirus to Nostradamus directly. Is it, have you seen it? Is it accurate?
Yeah. No, it's a classic example of what frauds do, hoping that you just don't know. For instance, when he says it's the twin year.
That's right.
And most of these are sourced to British newspapers, but for instance, the twin year.
One year would be 2020 to me, right?
Yeah, which is common sense. And that's how these cons con people. I mean, it makes sense. It's an innocent thing to assume. But there, what about 1818? What
that's
about
right.
1919?
1919, that's right.
What about hundreds of numbers, including 3030? You know, so, but, and then the other thing, too, is he calls the corona and then makes a translation, which is crazy. He calls corona queen. Or queen. The term queen is corona. Coron is a crown. And he uses the world economy will collapse. Well, it shows that, you know, when I look at Nostradamus' French, because I read his 16th century French and all the languages he uses, and I have a database which looks at everything he used. And he never used econom or économie in any of his works. And when the way it was used back in his time was being frugal, economic. It was a very different term than, ironically, now where economy is synonymous with waste and inflation and all that. Now it's very, words change their meaning, and that's very important. So yeah, the most important thing I want to tell everybody out there is that Nostradamus indexed all of his prophecies. They have numbers and sources. He must have seen, in fact, it was happening in his own time. He was arrested in Marseille in the early 1560s after he became famous for his prophecies. And he was far more famous than like Edgar Cayce or Gene Dixon were. He was the talk of the courts of Europe.
And this was without media or social media.
Well, you see, the thing that's intriguing with Nostradamus is he is a figure, an early best-selling author of the last great information revolution that happened 500 years ago with the printing press. And so it's fortunate for anybody who studies him is that almost everything he wrote survived because there were so many copies of it, because he was highly successful. His almanacs kind of created the genre. And which also had prophecies about local issues in France. And then in 1554, 1555, he was very concerned about the coming of a potential civil war, religious civil wars, and between Protestants and Catholics in France, dealing with the death of the king in a jousting accident. So he was actually, because he made that dangerous prediction, became the talk of the court. He was summoned to the king and queen of France, mainly because of the queen, who was also from Florence.
She was a supporter of his, right?
She was a Medici. She was one of the family that ruled Florence. She was, and she became his occult confidant and saved him, actually, a few times there are things that happen in my life that are kind of, I have to chuckle and say, well, this is similar to what happened with Nostradamus, is that people thought on both sides of the Civil War that he couldn't stop, which he very accurately predicted in his further prophecies, that he was, if the Calvinists thought he was a Catholic agent, the Catholics thought he was a Protestant Calvin firebrand. And I wouldn't even put it past the fact that some knowledge of him once being born a Jew might have also caused him some trouble. But he has a distinct distinction that's rare of prophets. He died peacefully in his bed, a rich man. He also, by the way, just so I don't get these letters anymore from people who don't read about Nostradamus, I constantly get letters from Nostradamus never asked for any money to do any prophecies. It's, well, Nostradamus was a businessman, and his business was prophecy. He never did anything for free.
It was the business of prophecy for him.
He it's his profession. It's like a grocer. You're going to go to a grocer and say, oh, just give me the food. You're doing religious work, and therefore you should be poor, and just give me the food and not be able to run your grocery shop. In the end of his life, the queen, who was the regent, because of the very things he foresaw, the queen regent came on her great tour of the realm to placate all the disruption, because the first of nine civil wars happened. She made a point to see him first, go down to Provence, and in public give him honors so that the people would stop persecuting him in his own town. And then he ended up dying, and he wrote all these prophecies about he was really concerned about his bones being disturbed by people, and he put a curse on his tomb, which was in the wall of the church of the Cordeliers, a Franciscan church, not the church that you see now, which is much farther out of town than the church. He was very much into Franciscans. So that alleviates any of the people who think he was into the Knights Templar, even though the Templar church is just down the road. I know I was there.
Yeah, he converted to Catholicism, didn't he?
Well, his family did.
Okay.
But there's very much of the Jewish tradition that, I mean, he was the classic little C Catholic. Catholicus in Greek means universal. And, there's a struggle, which I've often in my own prophecy books about Catholic prophecy and St. Malachi and the last pope, which I'm upgrading again to update it for Francis and being involved in it. There's this struggle in the church between little C Catholics who see that everything has a cathodic universal connection, and those who are more dogmatic, who try to take all that whole cosmos and jam it through a narrow tube of dogma and dispense it out the straw. And so that's been the struggle of Catholicus since 16 centuries, when the bishops, Catholic bishops, won out in the Council of Nicaea to organize the church into its organized ways.
Looking at his quatrains, John, and we're coming up to the break, but looking at his quatrains, did he, in your opinion, foretell this coronavirus?
Yeah, there's some interesting, just one of them, Quatrain 75, it's not the ones that are, well, one of them actually was grabbed by the press. It was kind of right. Could be. Quatrain 75, Century 3, Volume 3, actually calls Paul Verona, Vicentia, and Saragossa. It's not just Italy this plague happens, but he's mentioning towns that are standing for countries. That's France, Italy, and Spain.
Well, he hit those.
Yeah, swords damp with blood from distant lands. A very great plague will come with a great scab. Now, that also means shell or pod. Now, I imagine that he would have, because it's done it in other things, it's almost like he has a sense of our media, and look at what symbol is in our heads all the time, that pod with the little stubby fingers, that's the coronavirus.
John, hang with us. We'll come back and talk more and take some calls next on Coast to Coast AM.